keeping with the NRL theme, let's listen to our interview last year of one of the all-time greats. It's the King, Wally Lewis.
Our legend of the game is the one and only Wally Lewis, AM, thanks very much. A bloke who had, well, when you have nicknames and they're royalty, it tells you something about
the
it.
King.
King Wally, the Emperor of Lang Park, he's been good enough to join us on the line now. G'day, Wal.
G'day, boys, how are you? I was enjoying some of those names. I've been called plenty of
them. Yeah, well, this program, Wally, goes pretty much all around New South Wales. So I think a lot of people in this state had a love-hate relationship with you during the course of your career, and that was testimony to what a great player you were. Let's go back to where it started. I think, was it your old man Jimmy was a first grade player up there in the Brisbane comp, and that's how rugby league became a part of your life?
Yeah, he played for both West and South here in Brisbane, and later went on to coach first grade at the Winner Manly Club, where I eventually ended up playing. And my mum was pretty handy at sport as well. She represented Queensland in netball for about 10 years. Had five kids along the way. Born into a sporting family, definitely. And I think that was a massive benefit for me.
Yeah, in the genes. Well, you went on an Australian schoolboys tour, I think, in 77. And by memory, there was a lot of great players to come out of that tour, Wal.
Yeah, fantastic players. Yeah. I mean, when you go back and you have a think about it, the captain of the tour was Tony Melrose, who played for the Wallabies, also Parramatta. Spent a bit of time there. And another bloke by the name of Mark Eller, who was a pretty handy player. The two inside centres were myself and Michael Hawker. And, of course, Michael Hawker went on to
play
captain
Wallabies.
Outside centres, Michael O'Connor and Gary Eller. And then Glenn Eller was playing at fullback. And we had some very handy players in the forward pack as well. Chris Roach, Tony Darcy, just being amongst them. It was just a super side. It was fantastic and a real thrill to play in.
Why'd you go to the Valleys Club? Why'd you go to league straight after that?
Mate, I played league all of my life.
Right.
All the way through. I went to, after getting in a Queensland primary schools team, I received an offer to go and play rugby union. I'd never really heard of rugby before. So I went there and I didn't enjoy the game too much to start with, but in grades 11 and 12, I certainly did. There was a little bit different about it, a new coach, and then getting the opportunity to play in that Australian schoolboys, that was freakish. And we had one rule from the coach. He said, if you kick the ball, you won't be playing the next couple of games. We played, I think it was 19 games on tour, and we actually kicked the ball less times than the games that we played on tour.
Wow.
We kicked it less times than the 19 occasions that we played, and it was just a thrill. But to have some of the blokes in it, like the Eller brothers, Hawker and O'Connor, it was just freakish to have blokes like that that were amongst the greatest attacking players I've ever seen.
Well, Wally, that's when the game was rightfully called the game they play in heaven, when the ball was used and passed through the hands, and it's just so good. Well, I was living in Townsville for a year when I was watching you as a young man at Valleys and up against another young man by the name of Mal Meninga. I think it was in the grand final in 1980 by memory. Would that be right? Or
1979,
that'd be it, yeah.
Yeah, and that's right.
And both young men then, but you stood out at the time. And Mal Meninga, you're going to become such an important part of your Australian and Queensland teams over the years. What was it like to play alongside him in all those great years, Wal?
Wonderful. I actually played against him the first time in under-18s. We'd been beating the Police Academy pretty comfortably, and then all of a sudden in the grand final they had this kid. As soon as he got the ball, he ran straight through our team a couple of times, and we thought, where has this bloke been? I've never seen him before, but I was about to be introduced to him virtually every season from there. To play alongside him was fantastic. He just had that skill, that charisma. His timing was wonderful. The power that he had for such a young man.
Wow.
That was, you know, where he wasn't much above 14 stone in those days, but he was certainly fantastic. He was just a bloke that had, a wonderful thought process about playing footy, which, and it was a little bit unusual for young blokes in those days, because it was just sort of get the ball, do what you can, and try and, you know, prove how good or how tough we were. But he also had the benefit of being coached by Wayne Bennett in the under 18. Bennett was the coach of the Police Academy team, and then he went on to coach Mal at South. So it was fantastic, and it was also an opportunity at that time for a lot of the young kids to to sort of go ahead. And I'm probably jumping the queue a little bit here, but when we got the chance to play with a lot of these kids in the Queensland sides, I can remember somebody said asked a question, who was most responsible? They asked it to Dick Tosser Turner one time, and Ron McAuliffe. They said, who was most responsible for Queensland's success? And McAuliffe, in his typical politician day, said, well, I think it's the Lord, the great man above. We've had a lot of blokes that were born within a similar time frame. And then he went through. He went Colin Scott, Kerry Boasted, Gene Miles, Mel Meninga, Chris Klaus, Wally Lewis, Mark Murray, Paul Vorton, Wally Fulton-Smith, Brian Niebling, Greg Dowling, Greg Kineskew and Dave Brown.
All legends.
All of those blokes born within 18 months and played a lot of footy. Either born in 1959 or 1960.
All amazing. Legends too. Let's go forward to that night, July 8th, 1980, at Lang Park. And you spoke about a guy with skill and charisma, and that were just two of the great attributes of the legendary Arthur Beetson. Did you understand, Wally, when you ran out for that game, how important it was, or how important it was to become for the future of rugby league in your state?
Yeah, it had been talked about for a long, long time that it was likely that they were going to get rid of the interstate clashes, because a lot of the Sydney guys used to pull out. They used to see it as a game that probably endangered their chances of being fit for the club game that weekend, which was sad, because interstate football certainly had a great history, and thankfully State of Origin was the saviour. And it certainly, have a look at what it's and what it's grown to be now. It was absolutely wonderful. But I don't think any of us at that stage, quite honestly, understood just how big, how powerful, and how entertaining State of Origin football could be.
Wally, we've always heard over the years about how much passion there is in the Queensland side, and where it was born from. It was born from that night that Jimmy spoke about earlier in 1980. I'm always interested, what did Arthur Beetson say to the team prior to you running out for that very first State of Origin match?
He walked around to each and every player in the team and gave them a pat on the back, and probably only had a 30-second conversation with them. He knew that he had to also look after his own game. There were some people that suggested that he wasn't going to be able to handle the entire contest at 35 years of age. But I can remember him coming up to me, and he said, Wally, he said, just want to let you know how much confidence the team have in you. He said, I've spoken to a number of people up here, and he said, they've told me that you're the best player that there is in Queensland at the moment. And I can remember feeling 10 foot tall and bulletproof. And I walked over to Chris Close and I said, oh, mate, I'm feeling really good about it now. Fantastic. I'm over the top. Arthur just said to me that he thought that I was the best player in Queensland. He's been told I was the best player in Queensland. Choppy started laughing. He said, come over here. And we walked over to Mel Meninga and he said, Mel, tell Wally what you just told me. And he said, well, Arthur came up to me and he said, you're the best player here in Queensland. we laughed at each other. But and then Arthur heard about what we'd been talking about. So he pulled us aside and he said, guys, I haven't seen a lot of you play. He said, but unless you had some sort of ability, you wouldn't be here in the first place. Get out there. You've got a lot of blokes that have wonderful football skill alongside them. He said, just trust your mates. Always trust your mates. If you weren't any good, they wouldn't be here in the first place. We're here to win. And I can remember, you know, the words when I was out there. You know, I had some severe doubts about whether I was actually going to make it, and so did Choppy and so did Mel. But once they'd sort of got out there and displayed the sort of confidence that had been instilled in them by Arthur, I think it was just, you know, a real indication of what was to come for State of Origin football, because we realised that it was the last chance for Queensland to be able to gain some sort of confidence and a belief that they were going to be able to do it at State of Origin level.
Wally, we often ask our legend of the game what it's like for the first time when they represent their country. You did that in 1981 v France, and you had a comfortable victory at the SCG. But I want to ask you about the time you were captaining your country. It was at the SCG again. It was after an Ashes test in 1984. You'd had a win against Great Britain, and you were booed by the Sydney crowd. Given, you know, we can only imagine what it's like to play for Australia, let alone captain Australia, and you had that. What impact did it have on you?
Yeah, we were out there singing the national anthem, actually. Well, what I thought, I was singing my national anthem. The people in the crowd were singing their national anthem, which I'd heard a couple of times before about the one that rhymes with Wally's a banker.
Oh, yeah.
But I certainly wasn't involved in finance at that stage.
Yes.
And it was disappointing. Mm. I thought, well, that'll do me. Here I am wearing the green and gold, representing Australia, doing what everybody dreams about doing, and I'm copying it, and I thought, oh, well, maybe a sook. You won't be the last time you hear it, but there was a bit of disappointment attached to it. So it was just a case of go out there. I thought, and it only took a look at the jersey that we were wearing, the green and gold, to sort of inspire me about it. But it certainly was something that that I do remember for all the wrong reasons. But the thrill of beating Great Britain certainly took that over and took it out of the question for a while.
Yeah, Wally, I think you mentioned it earlier that New South Wales also had a love-hate relationship with Wally Lewis during the Origin series, but that was more out of admiration for the dominance you had, particularly at Origin level. Could you use that sort of, I guess, angst that you found from the New South Wales crowds to your advantage?
Yeah, pretty much. It turned out to be the way, and I also had the benefit of, after playing alongside Arthur in the first one, I was playing under him, and the lines that he used to deliver to me were very well timed. He knew when I needed a little bit of assistance, a little bit of inspiration, or if I needed to be sparked. And there were plenty of times where he gave me sort of a couple of short, sharp lines that were designed to make me a little bit cranky and play a little bit better. And I think he did those to the best of his ability, because there were a couple of times where he just walked it. The one that I remember more so than anything else, and it was the way that Arch used to do it, just before we went out, and I noticed that he hadn't said a damn thing to me in the build-up to the game, and I coughed a bit of a spray, and just before he walked out, he reached inside his blazer and pulled out a newspaper that he had folded up, and he just dropped it on the table on where the players used to get a rub down before the game, and he said, you read the paper today, and it had the media were giving me a bit of a spray and saying that I was overrated. And I looked up at him and sort of half smiled, and he just raised one eyebrow and walked out the door. And when I sort of walked out, Gene Miles and a couple of the other guys just sort of said to me, mate, we're behind you. And whatever else they went on to say after that, I don't really remember, because I just thought, well, that's the way that Arthur's done it. It's probably the way that he deserved doing it, after being told that he couldn't perform at, 32, then 33, then 34 years of age. And I certainly did appreciate it that evening. And when I came back in, he looked at me and smiled, and he said, time to throw the paper in the bin. And it just brought a bit of a giggle. And I was pretty happy with the way that I'd gone for that 80 minutes. But I knew that I'd sort of been given wonderful assistance from a bloke that had been through plenty of similar paths that I did.
Speaking of Gene Miles, how close did you come to signing with Manly, the two of you, back in, I think it was 1986?
Oh, we signed. We were signed, sealed, unfortunately not delivered. we went through a bit of a process where, in those days, to even negotiate with a player, if you want to play State of Origin football, you have to sign saying that you promised to stay in Queensland for the next 2 years.
Right.
Those agreements were basically illegal. Ron McAuliffe admitted he thought that they were illegal. He said, but son, he said, it's going to take a long time for this to get into court, to start fighting this out, probably 2 or 3 years, of which you won't be able to play. So the guys used to sign, and they'd all head off to Sydney clubs, unfortunately, but that was the case of us doing it. With the Manly one, though, we hadn't been paid by a club here in Brisbane, Winner Manly, who Gene Miles, myself, Greg Dowling, Colin Scott were playing for. They'd gone broke, and we hadn't been paid for about 3 years.
Wow.
And in those days, I think we were paying about 18.9% bank interest minimum. So it was very disappointing. We felt that, a lot of guys, the marriages were breaking up because of the wives were sort of saying, you've got to get out. We couldn't leave the clubs. Cut a long story short, we had to get an offer from Sydney. We were told that there was a Sydney club, and the clubs had to apply for permission to negotiate with the clubs to get that in motion. If they were granted that sort of opportunity, then the communication could start. We weren't told who the club was. We just got told to be at a certain place, which was the old Brisbane Airport. We thought, strange place to do the negotiations here. A bloke came up and said, I'm a pilot. I've got to fly you to Sydney. It's a private jet. Who's flying us down? Don't know. Just been hired to do it. Flew us to Sydney. Gino and I, when we were flying down, had sort of discussed how much we were talking about getting. We thought, well, you know, we've got to ask about the about 70 grand, 80 grand. The top players in Sydney are on about 90. And to cut a long story short, when we were down there, we on the way, we worked out what we were going to ask for. We got picked up and delivered to Kerry Packer's office, and we just went absolutely cold. Mm. We didn't know what to do. The plans that we had in place, we were probably doubting them a bit. and then we walked into Packer's office and he looked at us and he said, so you're the blokes causing us all the trouble. Threw a contract in front of both of us and said, hurry up and sign those. We said, well, we can't, Mr. Packer. You've got to make us an offer. He said, son, let's get one thing straight. You're in my office. You'll do business my way. I don't gotta do anything. And we were swallowing a little bit hard. And he said, well, Mr. Packer, and he said, and then Doug Daly was the Manly secretary. He was there as well.
Yeah.
He said, Mr. Packer, we can't have these players talking about how much each other's going to be on. It's not fair. And Gene and I had both talked. We said, you know, we're going to both ask for 75 grand. You and me, we're best friends, 75 grand. We can't do it. 75,000. We've got to stick to it. Yep, best mates. You aren't getting more than me. No. Same. Yep. That's the way they do it. And Doug Daly said, yeah, got to be one at a time. So Gino virtually tore a hamstring getting out the door, leaving me in there. And Packer said, son, I've got a few things on today. Okay, so if you don't mind, let's get this over and done with. How much are you going to ask for? And I said, well, Mr. Packer, you got us. And he said, oh, I know, you don't got to do anything. Well, what about those? You know, sort of, if I say 75, he's going to chop me down. 75, chop me down. I thought, oh, I'll ask for double that. That'll get things moving. He said, well, let's get it underway. How much can I ask for? I said, well, okay, well, if you want me to be there, you're going to have to give me $150,000, Mr. Packer. And he started giggling, and that turned into a vicious roar. Laugh you. He said, you're a Queenslander. You reckon you can get that sort of money here in Sydney? You're a Queenslander. And he just kept laughing, and I felt the embarrassment, ridiculous, about doubling the money. I thought, oh, this is stupid. You know, oh, no. And I've also double-crossed my best friend, who I promised we're only going to ask for 75, my best mate. Oh, no. And he said, and that's what you're asking. And I said, well, if you want me here at Manly, that's how much you're going to give me. And by the way, it's a 3-year deal, not a 2. And he stopped laughing. He said, you're an arrogant so-and-so, aren't you? And I said, yeah, I've already agreed to that. Yep. And he said, and you're greedy too. And I said, yep, but you give me the 3-year deal and you got me. And he said, son, you're easy. Get out and get the next bloke in here. And I sort of went all cold for a minute. I thought, I'm getting that money. This is ridiculous. Wow. And I thought, oh, but what about my mate? I promised him. That's how I'll whisper it to him when I go past. Mm. And Packer said, you wait here. We'll get the other bloke in here first. You're not telling him how much you're getting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So Gino walked in and I was trying to raise my eyebrows, look at him when I walked out. I walked outside and I just finished shaking hands with Bob Fulton and Doug Daly, who were there representing the club. It was probably 15 seconds and I was feeling super guilty about the double-crossing Gene. And then I heard the buzzer on the secretary's desk. You can come back in there. And I thought, I've given Gino, poor old Gino, what, 10, 15 seconds. Mm. I couldn't look at him when I got in there, and Packer said, oh, well, Bob, you got yourself an easy deal here. He said, we've got these blokes in. He said, they both agreed to terms. And I said, oh, no. And he said, Lewis, he's already announced his and signed, and he's on 150. And I said, oh, no, my best friend. I'm not going to look at him and see what he's going to say here. And he said, and Miles, he's on $135,000. Oh, my best friend. I was worried about double-crossing. Double-crossing. And I looked at him straight in the face, and he just had the tongue stuck out the side of the cheek. And it was one of those things that, as Packer said later, fellas, I think both of you have just realised today, you never, ever trust your mates. No such thing. The only thing that stopped us from going to Manly, Doug Daly was the Manly secretary, who said, Mr. Packer, if the rest of the players at Manly find out how much these players are on, they'll revolt. So put them on a much less contract. We ended up signing for half of the fee. Mm. Eventually, Ron McAuliffe, the QRL boss, said that we'll match that. The QRL were to pay half of that, but what we didn't realise at the time, their intentions were we only had to match the contract that was given by Manly, not the half that came from Packer. So effectively, we were contracted to the QRL for $37,500, The club for $37,500. But the club, once again, were unable to pay, so we stayed in Queensland for $37,500.
It's amazing.
Extraordinary.
It's a great yarn, Walt. Your whole career's a great yarn, really. It's just been fantastic. I'm sure the listeners have appreciated how candid you've been. Really appreciate you being on the program. A big thank you to Channel 9 who organised this, and we'll look forward to catching your coverage of the Rugby League over the coming months as well.
Good on you guys. Look forward to it.
Thanks so much, Walt.
There he is, Wally Lewis, the Queensland Rugby League legend.
We only scratched the surface there, Jimmy.
I wanted to talk to him about slicing through the back line like a Stradbroke Island shark.
Gee.
He's got glue on all his fingers, right?
Yeah, I know.
He's the emperor of Lang
Park. You love reciting this.
Oh, it's fantastic.